Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. It is Tuesday, the 3rd of October. We're going to be talking about the 2nd of October episode of Monday Night Raw. This is episode number 63 of the Raw Rundown. I'm getting very technical in my explanation of everything. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I co-founded Inside the Ropes with a man who just turns up when he wants to. But I'm joined now by a bastion of St. Louis integrity and a man who I now need to monitor pretty much everything he says ever again. It's David McCutcheon. Hi, David.
Hey, everybody. You know what's kind of funny, though, Kenny?
Please be careful this week. Please just, like, see before you talk, just think. Just be like, right, could what? Kenny end up in court from this? Yes or no? That should be the barometer of everything that you do from now on, I think.
What is thinking? What's that? I've never heard of that before.
It's that thing Val does when she's not listening to you.
Complaints? you know, it's kind of funny, though. You know, I was going to hold off on this story. But then you mentioned him in the intro. And Mr. Robert Duffin, you know, I got some fan mail this week, Kenny.
It would not be like you to actually talk about your family. You don't like to really brag about that kind of stuff. So I'm surprised that you would talk about it on air, but I'm very pleased that you feel comfortable enough and this is a safe space where you can talk about that accomplishment. So please do continue with your fan mail.
Yeah. My fan mail. It came from a little boy actually who listens to the podcast. His name is Werner, and he is from Munich, and he wanted to tell me he has a disease called the saddies. You know, and he gets real sad occasionally. You know, he'll sit around and he gets real down in the dumps. And he is, of course, a fine pleasure to our Patreon page. You know, you need to get on the Inside the Ropes Patreon to enjoy all the things that little bastard. What's his name? I can't forget what the name I just made up.
Werner.
So that's
wait,
it.
Where,
yeah.
Where what's the address that people would go to for Patreon?
That would be patreon.com/ inside the ropes, right?
That's the one.
That's it. So, you know, you want to go on there and donate some money like poor Werner did. And Werner, he ended up contacting me and he said, "Oh, David,
please don't do an accent. Like I'll literally PayPal you money while we're on air for you to not do accents." Like,
well, shit! I'll gladly take that, Kenny. How much are you offering?
$100 to not listen to that accent.
Well, unfortunately for you, it cost $102 to not listen to that accent. So, I mean, it's up to you. It's up to you if you want to kick up the extra $2.
Just finish whatever this fucking thing is. Just. You're mad. Kid for Germany likes you, right? Okay. How the fuck does this work, Robert?
He's an 11-year-old boy, and he just wanted me to know how much he loves it whenever Robert and I do a podcast together. And
what does he do the other 365 days of the year?
He's sad all the time, Kenny. Just all the time. He has the saddies. Remember, we were talking about this. You don't listen to me, Kenny. I feel betrayed because you never listen to me. But he said that
betrayed.
Robert
I need to podcast
and I,
with you.
He feels like he's overwhelmingly sad lately, and I told him that I'm going to do my damnedest to get together with Robert and do a fine, swell, upstanding # Hollywood elite # liberal elitist podcast just to make him happy and to send his saddies away on a permanent vacation. Because we don't want people to be sad, especially poor little what's his fucking face that
Werner.
I can't remember. Werner, yeah, poor little guy. Little sad.
Do you know
man.
That's a very
so
good.
Sad.
It's a very good story, but it does remind me that if anyone has seen the new episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which aired on Sunday night, which was fantastic, Jason Murphy asked me on Twitter, the answer. This is only going to make sense if you've watched this new episode of Curb. David was foisted onto me. That is what happened. And I will foist him onto somebody else. That is the way the world works. But unfortunately, I've not been able to foist him on yet. Therefore, here we are. But before we kick off...
I do love a good foisting.
Well, you remove an Owen, we're up your alley. Anyway, the thing is, before we get to the podcast and we talk about different things, we talk about Monday Night Raw, we talk about, maybe we talk about Val or something, I don't know. We talk about, well, I have a story, ladies and gentlemen, and non-binary neutrals. So we say it from now on. See that way you do the third one and you're clear, no matter what. Anyway, Fishgate. Fishgate. Fishgate took place, and I'm going to tell you all about it. But before we do that, in all seriousness, I like to think that whenever we do interviews on the show, we bring different people on that, like, it's cool to have, you know, we have the big WWE names, you know, WrestleMania and SummerSlam season. We have guys like, you know, Finn Balor and Sami Zayn and Nakamura and Jinder.
Brock Lesnar. Yeah, Brock Lesnar one time. Yeah.
Goldberg, you know, all these people. But also, I think it's cool to feature other stuff. So, we've had Court Bauer of MLW on the show a few times before. We've talked about his time in WWE creatively. We're going to try and put those archive interviews up on our Patreon service soon. But him and MLW did this cool thing this weekend. It was Thursday night, October 5th is the date in Orlando, Florida. They're doing an event called MLW One Shot. And they're trying to have a show where they showcase some new people. They bring in some, you know, people that you would know, like Ricochet and MVP and Sami Callihan and Filthy Tom Lawler, but with some newer names as well. So we caught up with Court to have a chat about it, because I think it's an interesting concept. So we've got about 20 minutes here with Court. I think it's very worth listening to. He talks a little bit about the first incarnation of MLW that they ran in 2002 to 2005. Listen to some of the people and some of the things that they did in this time frame. It's mad to think that I didn't get a chance to see any of it because it sounded cool. We talk about what MLW One Shot is going to be, and we talk about the return to commentary of Tony Schiavone for the first time since WCW closed its doors in 2001. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. I'm actually really excited for that. Good on Mr. Tony Schiavone, who has a podcast of his own with Conrad Thompson, I believe.
He does.
On the MLW Network.
You can go get that. And he's going to be commentating the event with Rich Bikini, who's also a previous guest of Inside the Ropes, but he also was known as one of the voices of NXT for a while. So that should be cool. But anyway, here to talk about MLW One Shot, all the stuff surrounding it, and much, much more, here is MLW Head Honcho, Court Bauer. And we're back in Inside the Ropes, and you know, we've been doing interviews for years, and recently we've had a lot of WWE stars on the podcast and stuff, but we wanted to bring on one of our favourite guests. He got through the WWE trenches, he worked with Vince McMahon, he got through it, he then created a podcasting network. And MLW, you might know as a podcast network, but it's now coming back as a wrestling event for a one-shot October 5th. It's Court Bauer. Hey Court, how's it going?
Hey, what's going on, Kenny?
Not much. It's been a while since we spoke, and it just seems like you've been doing more and more and more every single year. And there's not only Wally Mania, there's not only podcasts. Now you're doing a wrestling event. You've always got your fingers in a lot of pies.
Yeah, well, apparently I like the flavor of all the pies because I keep coming back for more. I really thought just a few years ago that I would be moving on and not even doing a podcast, and then evidently that didn't take too long for me to shift gears and go on to do other things. But it's something that I just thought it was that chapter had closed for me, and I was doing other stuff and producing a lot for like UFC Fight Pass and doing a lot more in the MMA world. And it was great, but I always have loved wrestling. And so when different opportunities came up, I was always excited to see where they took me, whether it was consulting for Ring of Honor, working for AAA, or consulting for Lucha Underground, or producing Jim Ross's one-man shows and working again with JR after our time at WWE. And he's such a first – you know, he's just a class act, just a great guy to be around, and always popping you for his great sarcasm. But it's been great just to have this podcast network kind of grow into something more. And like the slogan goes, the world of MLW never seemingly stops.
Well, I do want to ask you about a rumor, actually, that I've heard.
Okay.
Because, so obviously you've done a lot of podcasts. There's, you know, J.J. Dillon's got a podcast. Mm-hmm. There's Sean Mooney and Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I don't know if you, like, kidnapped them from the Titan basement. there's, like, you know, Flair had a podcast. You've got the Bruce Pritchard one, which is blown up. But I want to know, there is a rumor out there. Because last year in Dallas, outside of Wally Mania 2, I think it was, Virgil was spotted. And I've heard that he's been pitching to you the Fuck Money podcast. Is there any chance of it happening? Any chance at all?
No, I don't think we will do a podcast with Virgil. I think there's a certain point in which you realize you just got a lot of podcasts. How many can you possibly listen to? I mean, I'm not saying it's not a good idea. I'm not knocking Virgil. Just I don't know if that one's going to be probably hard to get sponsors based on the name of the podcast alone.
The Olive Garden may sponsor it. I mean, if they've got the irony. But it was a very good political answer. But I want to ask you about One Shot coming up on October 5th. So, because a lot of people might not know that, you know, with MLW and all the podcast stuff, it was a wrestling promotion first. Like, yeah. MLW was a wrestling promotion. So, can you talk a little bit about, for newer fans who are maybe, you know, maybe they listen to the Jim Cornette Experience or something to wrestle with, mm-hmm. about what the original promotion was and some of the top names that were there?
Yeah, the original promotion ran from 2002 to 2004. It had, we were on TV in all across Florida in 13 million homes on what was then the Sunshine Network, now Sun Sports, Fox Sports, Florida. We were on TV in Dallas, Channel 52, and Philadelphia, Las Vegas, some parts of New England, Colorado, as well as Puerto Rico, the United Kingdom on the old wrestling channel, Gaora TV in Japan, and out in the Middle East as well. We had some strong presence in India, actually. So that we had weekly TV hosted by Joey Styles, and we had we shot it and produced it out here in New York. Using a lot of the same production infrastructure from the ECW days, including the same head of production, Charlie Brazise, who's with us with MLW now. And the promotion itself was kind of like a blend of a lot of things. There was a little bit of the old school, a lot of hardcore wrestling in the old product, and also a lot of new faces. Tyson Kidd, Harry Smith wrestled. They were like teenagers and they wrestled for us then. You had CM Punk, who was like in his early 20s wrestling for us. You had Daniel Bryan wrestling Teddy Hart. So you had the protege of Shawn Michaels versus the next generation from the Hart family, an interesting match that ended up with Daniel Bryan basically exchanging real punches with Teddy and ripping off his pants.
Wow.
A very creative finish for a match, but they got into it and Teddy wouldn't stop moonsaulting, but it was interesting. But we had Terry Funk. We had Gary Hart come back, J.J. Dillon managing the Extreme Horsemen. We had a two-ring steel cage War Games match with a fireball that almost got Terry Funk and myself arrested. Steve Corino was one of our stars. Satoshi Kojima was our perennial world champion. It was an eclectic mix. We had a little bit of everything from every corner of wrestling, and someone once jokingly said, kind of was like the Star Wars Mos Eisley Cantina, where there was literally every creature from every walk of life was somewhere in that building. Raven comes to mind, but a lot of great talent. Sanjay Dutt before his TNA days. So I did that promotion too when I was 22, 23 years old. So I was very young coming off of my time with the Samoans and jump right into promoting, because that's really what I wanted. That was my plan, my hope, my dream was to promote, not go to WWE. I ended up going to WWE anyway, but it was a cool experience and one that I always had a great time. We had a great time running primarily in Florida, but we also ran in New York at the Manhattan Center. And it led to us years later in 2011 doing what was supposed to be a short run, limited series podcast called MLW Radio, where we were going to interview some of the old MLW wrestlers, sell some DVDs, and then call it a day. And then that happened, and here we are in the year 2017, and we have over 20 podcasts, with some of them getting 600,000-700,000 downloads a week. It's crazy to think that, you know, we're tracking to do our biggest year to date, and we've done things like Wally Mania. We have a VIP podcast subscription model. We have t-shirts, and now we're bringing back MLW for one night to essentially showcase today and tomorrow's wrestlers, real cutting edge guys that have helped change the business for the better and breathe a lot of new life into the business. Because I was there and I saw the 80s, 90s wrestling culture in the locker room, and it was fairly toxic. And there was a lot of politics, not wanting to put guys over. Obviously, we see how many of our heroes passed prematurely because of their lifestyles. And then you see the guys that are – they had to like work out of a deficit. If you look at this generation and tomorrow's generation, they really had to work out of a deficit to overcome so many hurdles and to find a way to make a living doing this. And they haven't just done that. They've really revived the business at a regional level in terms of independent wrestling. It's never been hotter. And they collectively are responsible for that. So I've been really, really inspired by them, whether it was Ospreay, Ricochet, and all these different guys. I just think they're just so damn talented, and I wanted to work with them again. I worked with some of them at Wally Mania, including Ospreay, Ricochet, et cetera, this past year in Orlando, and I thought it'd be great to do more with them because I've never had it easier in terms of working with talent than this generation. They're 100% professional. They're hungry. They're actually really freaking media savvy, and they bring it in the ring. They don't phone it in. If whether there's 20 fans or 2,000 fans, they're going to give you a hell of a show. And so I can't wait to give back to them and give them this opportunity just to be showcased. I mean, doing the media, spreading the word about what they're about the last few months has been very rewarding. And now giving them an event where we just let them do their thing is kind of the culmination of this whole project.
One of the things that kind of strikes me about it is interesting, and obviously, you know, you and I have spoken for years now and stuff, but like, the thing that's interesting about bringing MLW back for the one shot is that, and trust me, I've had experience in this, there are companies that use imports a lot, right? And like, you know, there's maybe like a wrestling event and it's sold on like, you know, Bret the Hitman Hart's gonna be there, or whatever it is. But what I thought was fascinating about the MLW one shot thing was, you didn't like bring this back and put it on like the back of a legendary name and sell it that way. Like immediately it was kind of like, you know, you've got Ricochet and Shane Strickland, and there's been videos sort of hyping them both up and stuff, and it was very clearly a different dynamic to the usual kind of independent wrestling shows that you saw. I'm guessing that was part of your ideology when you wanted to bring this back, was to make sure that it wasn't just like, here's yesterday's legends and that's kind of it.
Yeah, and taking a little bit of what I had experienced working doing UFC Fight Pass and a lot of MMA hype, and blending in as much reality as we can, and you try and establish unique stories and feuds and rivalries. I said, hey, you know, I thought this guy's my friend, and he hit me with a chair. Uh-oh, now we're going to wrestle. And so that's what the MLW 360 experiment was for us, our 7-part YouTube series where for, you know, little 2-minute videos, you get to know the guys and see their real life journey, find out about how they are friends. And then as time goes on, it's very similar to the parallels of Bret versus Shawn, where one looked up to the other and then a rivalry kind of blossomed and it turned pretty sour. And that's kind of what happened here. And it's a very real rivalry. And yet you get to see why are these guys doing what they're doing for this show, but in general, and you see what inspires Shane Strickland, the father of three little girls, and all the sacrifices he's made and trying to better himself so he can give them an incredible life. And with Ricochet, who's just wired to be like an elite athlete and doing what he's doing, and his hubris along the way, it's a really interesting reveal into their lives, you know, pulling back the curtain and seeing what it's like for Ricochet, who's in a relationship with Tessa Blanchard, and they're both on the road, and how do they relate to each other. And Moose is their roommate, and his questionable ethics with waste removal, let's put it that way. So there's some levity in there, but there's also just a lot of real life. You don't see any – I would say this. No one's done this in wrestling, but I think a lot of people will be telling their stories and marketing their events doing something like this, because it's first of all, it's really compelling, and it's not like I'm sitting here with a pencil writing up these ideas. It's okay, let's get cameras rolling and see what we we find. So there's a bit of a documentary style to it, and they are very interesting, fascinating people.
Yes, and so Ricochet and Shane Strickland is going to be the sort of main event of the card. It reminded me a little bit of when CM Punk did his first UFC fight and he faced Mickey Gall, and it's like Mickey Gall was going to be part of these build-ups, and it's like, well, this guy, not a lot of people know who he is, but he made sure that he was going to make, you know, take that chance. And I'm not saying with Strickland and Ricochet it's the exact same thing, but I like the kind of dynamic of that. It's appealing to watch, especially to, like you say, like before an event actually get some build and watch some stuff and kind of get invested in it before you get to the show. And you also have got MVP, who's on your podcast, obviously. He's facing off against Sami Callihan. Sami Callihan, who went to WWE and maybe didn't have the run that I think everybody thought he was going to have as Solomon Crow. How important was it to bring him in and sort of re-showcase him again?
Oh, yeah. Sami is so talented, and to give him the platform to just be Sami and let him conjure up all the wild and wicked stuff he does was, to me, was a no-brainer. He is very much a compelling figure within the wrestling community to a lot of the wrestlers. They look up to him, and he's kind of has a cult vibe to him too, where they really hang on every word of his, and he kind of gives them his sage advice. So there's a really compelling guy there as a real person. And in the ring, when the bell rings, I mean, he always brings it. He goes full throttle every match. So he's a different type of cat compared to, say, Shane Strickland or Ricochet. And that's what I liked about doing this, is having kind of showcasing variety, because we have, you know, the brawlers, we have a UFC versus an Olympian and Filthy Tom Lawler versus Jeff Cobb. But then we also have a 420-pound super heavyweight in Barrington Hughes. And we have, you know, some real jacked up big beasts of guys like Mike Perot. And I think it's important to have variety, to have flyers, to have brawlers, to have the big body guys, to have the super heavyweights. I'm a proponent. I've said this for years on my podcast, so I'd kind of be hypocritical if I didn't come out and do a show and showcase variety, because I like, when I watch my wrestling, to have a little bit of everything. I want to see the big guy. I want to see the fat guy. I want to see the cutting edge wrestling. I want variety on my show. And if everyone's doing the same thing from match one to match eight, then it's going to feel redundant, and it's going to make everyone's job a little harder. Whereas now, everyone can be showcased and be what they are and true to what they are. And it also makes my job easier, because you don't have to find creative ways to make eight matches stand out when, just by selecting the talent, you know, by virtue of that, they're going to be pretty effective in accomplishing that.
And I guess the other thing, because it is obviously with MLW in its original incarnation in 2002-2004, a lot of it was about, even just in your description of it, was about younger guys and newer guys getting to showcase. And it's kind of cool that in this new incarnation of MLW, it's kind of a similar thing. It's not like you're changing the ethos of what it was before, you're just modernizing it.
Yeah, we're modernizing it. You know, it's important to have a blend. It's to have the familiar, have the guy. You come for this guy, but you might stay for that guy. And it's important to have a little bit of everything, the brawling, the everything. If it's just one – look, if you go to a restaurant and there's just pasta on the menu, that's it. You may not go – you might love the pasta, but you might not want to go back there all the time, maybe once in a blue moon. And that's important, just to have that variety, whether it's TV too. I mean, there's great TV shows, but you also want to watch something – you might want to watch horror, but then you want to watch a comedy. It just depends. And I think it's important. And that's what I got into wrestling years and years ago, watching old WWF, was the variety. You know, you had Andre the Giant, and then you had the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, two radically different types of villains or heels. And then you had Macho and Ricky Steamboat and Hulk as your babies, all three of them categorically different baby faces and wrestled differently. And they were in the Legion of Doom and the Ultimate Warrior. They were different, and they drew money because of that. And they were forces of nature, and they were larger than life. But variety is important.
And then also what's cool about it is you had some sort of staggered announcements about what people were going to get to see. And then you announced you announced the announce team for the show, which is you've managed to get a couple of big coups, but one in particular of someone who is not, as far as I remember, he's not commentated a wrestling show in years. How, if maybe 15 years or something? Tony Schiavone is going to be calling the action live in Orlando. That's a pretty cool get. I mean, I know he does one of your podcasts, so maybe you kind of like threatened to fire him, but like, you know, it's still really cool that he's going to be there and doing that, and I think it adds another element to it.
It was a real honor to have Tony say yes. He was my first draft pick, along with Rich Bocchini, and it's funny because Rich was inspired by Jim Ross and Tony, which he grew up on watching, to get into broadcasting and to come full circle and now call MLW One Shot with Tony is pretty crazy. And Tony is one of those guys that he himself was a lifelong fan. He used to take a bus as a teenager in the 70s to go to Greensboro to see the big shows. And then in 2001, with the end of WCW, found himself out of a job, and so he had to reinvent himself, and he went into other sports broadcasting, calling for Atlanta Braves baseball and University of Georgia, and became a fairly big sports talk personality in the Atlanta area, and just for years just didn't really go near wrestling. And it's not that he didn't like it, it's just life moved on. And I think that's a very hard struggle for a lot of wrestlers and wrestling people, is finding that life and their identity after wrestling. But Tony, I think, did a really healthy thing, is severing those ties and then taking a siesta and coming back and finding there were a lot of people that really enjoyed his voice and hearing what his take on things with his podcast. And to me, now the circle is truly complete with that. We've officially brought Tony back into the sport by getting him in the booth. And I thought that was going to be something that was going to take a lot of convincing to do. And I had this – I wrote down all these notes and some sort of funky recruitment speech and everything for Tony to come back. And I called him up, took a deep breath, and said, all right, Tony. And I started to pitch him, and he just said, Court, I'm in. And I'm like, oh, really? That easy?
Wow.
and I was like, oh, shit. Awesome. I guess we're done here. I was thrilled. It's been just such a great thing to have Tony be a part of this. And he's done a lot of hype for us, done a lot of radio, a lot of podcasts, a lot of articles from the Orlando Sentinel and mainstream media as well. So I'll tell you this. One of the largest trending figures for MLW One Shot, the analytics tell us it's Tony. People are really interested and they want to see him call wrestling. So he'll be there in Orlando this Thursday calling it with Rich live, and then we will have that out on VOD this weekend on MLW.TV. Instead of them recording it afterwards in post-production in some editing suite where they don't feel the energy, you don't feel that electricity, we're going to put them live in there, record it, and then within 72 hours of the event, you'll be able to watch it. We're not going to live stream it because it's always, in my experience, been a challenge more than a success to try to do that. And I want this to be a positive experience for me and for our customers and fans. So that's why we're going to do it as a video on demand as opposed to a live stream. But we really, really, really are looking forward to having Tony call the whole show and to do it with Rich. It just feels like a great team. Like, there are times when I've worked with broadcast teams, whether it's in pro wrestling or MMA, and you're like, what's this going to be like? Oh my gosh, okay, I better coach them. I better give them a list of things to not do and versus to do. And you have to hold their hand, and you know there's going to be some post-production work or sweetening going on. With Tony and Rich, I know that these guys, I'm in good hands. Like, again, I don't have to worry about that because I'm surrounded by great talent.
Yeah, so MLW.TV is the place to go, and it's going to be on demand, obviously. We're going to be looking forward to it. Well, Court, I want to thank you for all your time talking to us. Best of luck with MLW One Shot. Where can people find you on Twitter and the MLW brand if they want to get more info, follow along, all that kind of stuff?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Court Bauer, CourtBauer. And you can follow MLW, Major League Wrestling, the home of the promotion and the podcasting network, at MLW on Twitter and Facebook.com/Major League Wrestling. And we just launched our Instagram, Instagram.com/ Instagram.com/Major League Wrestling. So new, I can't remember it. /Major League Wrestling. We just actually put up a photo of Daniel Bryan versus Teddy Hart from that match we talked about, as well as Kojima with the world title after a brutal match where he got awesome bobbed. You could see the effects on that he had on him. And then CM Punk, I think there's a photo of him, as well as some new stuff, including artwork from MLW One Shot done by Robert Pearson, which is awesome. It looks like something out of a 90s Marvel comic cover. It's pretty cool.
We will check that. Well, Court, I'm sure I will see you. I'll be hanging around like a bad smell at Wally Mania 4. It's four. Next year's four, right?
Four? Well, yes. We just completed the trilogy. We're going for, I guess, the fourth.
Okay. Okay. Thanks very much, and I wish you all luck with it. It sounds like it's going to be a really fun night, and you can catch it on demand this weekend at MLW TV. MLW.com. You give the address. I'm going to get it wrong. MLW.com/TV?
MLW.TV.
MLW.TV. It's the TV that just... I need to get used to it. Anyway, thanks for coming on, Court. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks. I've been waiting so patiently, been this way forever. I've been having the bad dreams at night when I sleep. I was born into poverty, a trailer park, white ghetto forever. All these bad damn bad and things affected me. I'm sick.
Thank you to Court for taking the time. You can go, as you heard him say there, which I could not seemingly get straight, MLW.TV is where you go. You can get it on demand. It'll be available on Friday or Saturday. And check it out, $4.99, and see how it goes. Also, if you want to get more of me and Court talking, you can go over to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. If you're at the $3 level or above, which is pretty much like everybody that's on there, there's another 30 minutes of Court and I, but we're talking current wrestling topics: Omega, New Japan, All Japan, WWE, gender, Brock, all kinds of different stuff. So it's worth checking it out over there on Patreon. And also on Patreon at the $5 level, it's the $3 level. The $3 level as well, you have Sandra and I on Monday talking about Hell in a Cell, and then the $5 level on Thursday or Friday, you're going to have Sandra and I reviewing Bad Blood in Your House with Undertaker and Shawn Michaels in the first ever Hell in a Cell. Finally, you can go over to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for more interview content. We've just got an Alexa Bliss one that's went up. We've got a New Day one that's going up tomorrow. Tons of stuff over there. But that's enough plugging. David, before we kind of get into Raw and I go into my story, how are you? Are you okay? Are you coping all right? Are you okay? This isn't a bit. I'm just asking you.
Kenny, uh-huh. I'm doing wonderful. I'm a healthy man. Kenny, did you know that I am down 2 pant sizes since I last saw you? All the pants that I bought for WrestleMania, they're dog shit. They had to be thrown away.
I did see you had a picture on your Facebook page of you stroking a pussy, and you looked very thin.
Oh, well, thanks. That's whenever you're stroking a pussy, you don't want to be called thin, I don't think.
You had to go there, didn't you? You couldn't just let it be a nice thing.
Oh, Kenny, what can I say? I'm a thick boy, right? I think that's what the internet calls us.
Girth is important.
A man with large bulging hips, as it were, you know. So, I'm doing wonderful, Kenny. I'm just living the dream, but I heard something about this. What was it? Fishgate that was plaguing you this past week?
It is plaguing me. Before we get into, and this is, I swear to God, I am not embellishing this story one iota. This is real and this happened, and I am ashamed of myself, but it happened, and it's Fishgate. And by Fishgate, I do not mean a dalliance with a slightly uncleansed lady. I mean, Fishgate in terms of food. What?
Oh, goodness gracious.
But before we get into that, never thought I'd segue from fish to this, but you know, really sad news actually in the news. Obviously, our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody in the Las Vegas area, and we have listeners there and people who have friends and family there. Terrible what happened, obviously, and we if you've got any friends in that area or you've went through any sort of loss there, we're with you. We hopefully our podcast can kind of cheer you up a little bit. And I don't want to get too political because I know some people don't like that. God forbid you try and, you know, be a voice for some change. But anyway,
yeah.
I just want to give one statistic. That's all I want to do. I'm not going to say, I don't care who you vote for. I don't care who you like. I don't care. Listen, I'm friends with Republicans. I'm friends with Democrats. It doesn't bother me. But in the UK in 1996, there was a shooting in Scotland in a place called Dunblane. You can read it up. Where a guy was able to walk into a primary school, which I guess for you guys is like, what's like the school when you're between like 5 and 10 years old in the States? What's that called?
Oh God, I'm blanking on it. Kenny, you gotta stop throwing these
kindergarten
things.
Is it kindergarten?
No. Kindergarten is for the young children.
If you're between like 5 and 11. You're in primary school in Scotland, and this guy walked into a primary school with guns, multiple guns, and killed multiple children and teachers. So once this happened, there was a big thing. There was also an incident in England somewhere in 1987, and they made a reform in 1988 to an act. But in 1996, all the political parties got together and made this ruling that they no longer were going to let people be able to have guns. You know, I guess there is exceptions with hunting and stuff like that, but for the most part, you don't have a gun. David, how many mass shootings do you think there's been in the UK since then?
You guys tend to be pretty smart. I will say zero.
Zero. Zero mass shootings since. But apparently, more guns will equal less gun crime, even though all these mass shootings that we hear about, every single one of them, when are they ever stopped by a civilian with a gun? Never. So for me, it's like, people were like, because I have this thing where like I try and put stuff out on Twitter because for whatever mad reason, I have a fair amount of followers, so I think, well, if I can like get people to see it, then it's good, because they need to see it.
Right.
And some people are like,
right,
well, you know, you shouldn't be politicizing. Yes, you should.
Yeah,
because
now
I'll tell
is
this,
the time to talk about this.
If I am shot to death and part of a mass shooting, please politicize. Please do it for me. I'm asking you, if I ever am involved in a mass shooting, which, you know, with my mouth could probably happen one day, just politicize. Try and stop it from happening to other people. Like, I saw a statistic that Charlie Beckett had put out, my future husband, who had put a thing out that said that there are more people that have died of gun crime in America than the amount of national deaths from World War II.
Ugh.
Like, what has to happen? Anyway, my short version was the thoughts and prayers of people in Las Vegas. I mean, I don't think it's going to change, but, you know, I
heard a wonderful tweet, and I forget exactly who did it. I think it was at Bez, B-E-Z. Where she said, America, the place where you can go and get shot for free, but go into debt for the rest of your life to have the bullet removed.
Yep, pretty much. And I'd put a tweet as well, and I think it's important to say this. You can be a proud American and also disagree with the gun law. Like, you don't have to do, like, one or the other. Like you can make you don't have to. Being a proud American doesn't mean that you have to say, let's have loads of guns. Not really how it works.
Right.
But I would.
You can have differing opinions on different subjects. Absolutely.
And my last thing I want to say on it is there's an article from The Onion that I thought was great where it says, in inverted commas, no way to prevent this, says only nation where this regularly happens.
Yep.
So,
and you know, I've seen that article about 24 times. And, you know, Kenny, back whenever I was a kid, the Columbine shooting happened, you know?
Yeah.
That's where a couple of kids went into a high school. And, by the way, junior high or middle school is what you were thinking of for the States. It just came to me. the high school thing jarred my memory. But these kids went into a high school with guns and killed a bunch of their classmates. And it was all over the news for years here in the States. And I can't help but wonder, in today's climate, 20 years later, literally 20 years later, it was 1997 that happened. 20 years later, if Columbine would even be on the news for more than a day in the current state that we live in.
It's sad. It's sad, but we got to hope it gets better, because otherwise, you know, there's no real reason to be
optimistic.
Optimistic is the word. I'm having a beer, but I've not.
You know, I did that thing earlier with the word visualization, and I almost couldn't say it again.
There you go.
Like, but today, that's the word I can't say today.
I also want to say, for anyone who's an old school wrestling fan, obviously the sad passing of Lance Russell at 91 years old. But you know what? 91, man, what a run. You know? Like, 91 years old.
That is a hell of a run, man.
And he was like, I was watching an interview today with him and Mean Gene Okerlund from like last year, and the guy looked like in his 70s. Like, he was just great. And it's a shame because his daughter passed away on Friday, and that's probably going to be a contributing factor as to why. But 91's a good run. We'll leave it there. But do you want to hear about Fishgate?
Let's bring this conversation up a notch. Let's make people forget about the woes that they have. Kenny, embarrass yourself on a international podcast, please.
And this is going to embarrass me, but if you want to tweet me about it with the hashtag of Fishgate, because do you know what? I'm going to tell you the whole warts and all story, and at the end of it, I'm going to ask my good friend David to tell me what he thinks. I want your honest opinion, David. Okay, so here we go.
Oh, honest opinion, are you sure?
100%. So here we go. So my friend Ollie, sadly his mum passed away last week. And that's kind of why my schedule's been a little bit, you know, fucked, because I've been over there refusing to leave his house so that I'm there.
And by all means, by the way, Ollie, I know you're listening to this. I love you with every fiber of my being. If there's anything that I can do for you, buddy, I'm here for you all hours of all days. Doesn't matter, Scottish time, American time. Hit me up. I genuinely love you and I care about you. Thinking of you, brother.
And you will reunite with him in New Orleans. But
I will, and we're going to have a fucking great time. I'm going to buy him around. It's going to be great.
It's going to be good. But so Ollie and I, we've been kind of just hanging out with his other friend Lenny, and we've been kind of just, you know, trying to have some good times in the build up to the funeral and stuff. Because there's a lot of stuff that goes on when, you know, you've got a bereavement and you've got to kind of get through it all, and you've got to, you know, deal with a lot of different things that you don't really want to have to deal with, and you've got to, you know, look out pictures and eulogies and all these things that you just really did not want to have to do. Anyway, so my mum, big hit on the podcast. Actually, I'll tell a very quick thing before we get into Fishgate. So my mum's been like, is there anything I can do to help out Ollie? Do you know what I mean? Because I need to try. I need to be there. So she, you know, my mum's got a bad smell, so she hangs about a little bit too long. But she comes in and she says, right, I'll take you and Ollie for lunch. And this was Saturday. So we go for lunch, and of course they sit down this thing. It's like, you know, three courses for $12.95. You're like, oh, fuck. I'm three courses in, right? That's what's happening. So we're eating, and Ollie's kind of, you know, like, oh, God, I mean, I've eaten so much food. And I said, no, wait a minute. You have what I like to call bereavement week, where you can eat whatever the fuck you want for bereavement week, right? Well, you can have what you want. But you don't want to do a bereavement month, because then it's going to take you ages to get back to where you were before. But a bereavement week you can do. So we have the lunch, and we're driving back to Ollie's, and Ollie's just trying to make chat in the car. And, you know, I think you get these in the States as well. You get these, like, car wash and valet things, right? Where the people, like, wash your cars manually. So we're driving along, having a good time. And by the way, just so I can say, my mum's boyfriend's nephew, Gary, I know you're listening to this. I know that you fucking go back and tell my mum the stories I tell about her on the podcast. Stop fucking doing it. If you do that again, motherfucker, you're not getting any more of our live shows. And if you do that again, I'm going to find your most depraved sexual dalliances you've had. And I'll find them. I will fucking find them, and I will put them in a collage for your mum for Christmas. I swear to fuck. Leave my shit alone. Don't be telling stories. Don't be a grass. Anyway.
Oh, shit, son. You just got put on blast, bitch.
Because my mum made a point going, don't you tell this in the podcast, because Gary will tell me if you told it. So, Gary, shut the fuck up.
You done fucked up, Gary! You done fucked up, bitch!
So we're driving along, and Ollie decides to make a little bit of chat. You know, just small talk, if you will. And all, and my mum's car was needing a wee car wash. She was in need of a service. I don't mean that way. She had a service 32 years ago. She's still starting over that. Anyway, so we're driving down the street. Ollie's like, oh, you know, Fiona, have you used the car wash? And she was like, no, I don't use car washes. They're a front for drugs. I was like, what? Aye, I'm telling you, they launder the money and it's drugs. Pure drugs. She said, it's rampant with the drugs. And I was like, are you in a cartel that we don't know about? Like, how do you know it's rampant with drugs? Oh, I know, Kenneth, I know. I'm sorry, fine, fuck's sake.
She's been watching too much Breaking Bad, you know?
I know, well, she's getting Netflix now, so now she's got fucking conspiracy theories coming out of her arse. So, anyway, fast forward, we're in bereavement week, and Ollie keeps wanting to order takeaways. And I've got a personal trainer, I've got a target weight I need to get to for the end of the year. And, we're having all these things, we're having pizzas and Chinese food and all these different things. Anyway, fast forward to last night, and Ollie had a wee stressful day. You know, he had to go and meet the priest and all that, and do the whole thing. So anyway, it's Lenny, Ollie's friend, Ollie, me, and Ollie's cousin Victoria. And it's about 10 o'clock at night. I said, Ollie, what do you want for dinner tonight? You know, it's on me. Whatever you want. And he said, well, I don't know. And then he talked about chicken pakora and different things. And then he said, a chippy. Now, I love a chippy. For our American friends, chippy is a chip shop where you can get various things with chips, aka french fries. So you can get, like, battered sausage. I don't mean, like, it's been, like, beaten up by a burly man out back. I mean, it's got batter on it. So you can get battered sausage, battered fish, you can get a deep-fried pie. Like, there's various things you can get.
Oh, Lord.
And, I mean, it's all delicious, but it's what you can get. So we're all sitting and thinking about the idea of ordering a chippy. And I said, guys, do you know what really gets up the crack of my arse, which really annoys me? And I don't know if anybody here who is listening from the UK, I hope that you get my rage here, because it really fucks me off. So what they do in the chip shop is, if you get fish and chips, especially if you're doing an online delivery, right? You don't get to see how it happens. You just get it delivered to you. So what they do is they put the chips in the little kind of box. I say it's not a box, it's like a little kind of like little styrofoam thing to hold the chips in, and then they put the fish on top, and then they put salt and vinegar, and then they roll it up in paper, right? Sure. But the problem I have with that, and I've always had with that, is what happens is, I like a crispy bit of fish, right? I like a little bit of crisp on my fish. I'm having a battered fish here, I don't want to have a congealed animal. So when you get it from the chip shop in this fucking bag scenario where they rape it in salt and vinegar, you get it home, and then when you try to take the paper off, the fucking batter's all clinging to the bag, there's bits of fish falling over your chips, you can't pick the fish up because it's just, you know, moist, it's not even fish anymore. So I hate that, right? I hate it so, so much.
So, I like that you intentionally used the word moist because you knew that it would accurately depict how gross it is.
Exactly. Now, on the other side, what I do when I go to Chippies, I'll say, could I have my fish and chips in a box? So then you don't have the problem of the paper, right? Or I'll say,
sure.
Or I'll say, you know, can you not put salt and vinegar on the fish? Then that way there's a hope that I might be able to pry it from death of the bag. So
sure.
So we're all having this chat, and Victoria's kind of letting me go, I know what you mean, Kenny. I know what you mean. So we're sitting there, and then we decide we're going to order a chippy. So Ollie and Lenny decide to get a special fish and chips. Now, a special fish is not a battered fish. It is a breadcrumbed fish. And
okay. That sounds really good.
I mean, I just take the batter. I mean, I go the full hog. I'm not getting half pregnant here. So... So Ollie's ordering it off a website called Just Eat. Right? Now, I want everybody that listens to this, there's thousands of you fuckers that listen to this, boycott Just Eat right now. For 1 week. I want them to feel the suffrage of business for what they did to me. So, we go to order this food, and I made the mistake of letting Ollie, big fucking large-framed Ollie, order this food. And there's a little kind of note of instructions, right? So you've got two special fish suppers for them, a fish supper for me. We call it, in Scotland, it's called a supper. Instead of saying fish and chips, it's a supper if you have something with chips. So it's a fish supper. Fucking amazing.
You people are so convoluted over there. Supper is just what you eat at your last meal of the day here.
Go and look at your gun laws, mate, and come back to me at the convolution. Anyway. Alright, you can be in a casino and have an open gun. You just have a concealed one. Fucking maniacs. Anyway, so Ollie gets to the end of the order. I've got my fish supper. They've got their special fish supper. And Victoria in the corner, she's gagging for a roll and fritter, right? She wants a roll and fritter. So then, you know, they're going to get a roll and fritter as well. Anyway, but I was like, I'm just going to have a fish supper. That's all I need. And I said, Ollie, because you know, at the end, you get a little suggestion, a little kind of instructions of what you can put in there, you know, of like,
sure,
you know, please make sure it's Diet Coke for the 700th time because you always bring me so fat Coke. Whatever it is that they do wrong. So I said, can you make sure in the comments to accurately depict that I would like my fish and chips to come in a box, right? So we do the order. The order comes to £27, right? It's a lot of fucking money, right?
Yeah, that seems a little high.
For £27, I could get an EasyJet flight to London in a hostel. For £27, right? So for £27, but anyway, so I'm excited, right? Because I'm gonna get a fish supper, and when you get a fish supper, right? For anyone who's from the UK, you know, fish and chips so good, and if they've got the right ratio of salt and vinegar, you get that delightful tinge of salt, but the slight moistness of the vinegar on the chip, and it's orgasmic. It's so good. So you're looking forward to that. You're salivating for this, and then in comes the bags, and we're the last order of the night. So we come in, and she says, we didn't have any fritters left, so we just gave you chips instead. Because, you know, she was a chain smoker that has like three teeth. So she came in and gave me that, and I offered her a tip. I said, here you go. And my tip was not like, you know, hygiene. My tip was more like, here is some money to put towards cigarettes or whatever you buy. So I offered her money, and she said, no, you're all right, son. I'm going home now. It's my last order. What a lovely, lovely lady. Refusing money. I was like, that's great. So anyway, we come in, and I'm taking all the bags out of the bigger bag, and I'm like, none of this makes sense, because there's tons of chips everywhere. And then it happened, David.
Oh no.
There are two boxes. One special fish in one, and one special fish in the other. There was no third fucking box for the man that paid £27.
Oh.
And then I look down and I can see it. I can see the stench of the bag.
And I you can see the stench.
They've fucking put that fish in that bag, and I bet you they fucking caked it. They've caked it in salt and vinegar. I can feel it in my... I think, right, and I can feel myself getting angry. This gets me angry. I'm angry talking about it. I have to have a beer to calm down. I had to have a bath earlier because I rekindled the thoughts of it. So, anyway, so I go,
do,
right.
Do you need a cold shower to cool down?
I might need one after this. So, I know I'm going a bit long here, so I'll wrap it down. But anyway, so so here we go. I'm going to open this. I thought maybe the you know, in some alternative universe, this fish is going to be okay. And I open it up, and as I peel back the paper, the batter peels with it.
Oh.
And there in front of me is this congealed fish.
Oh.
And then I try to pick the fish up, and the fish just falls through my fingers onto the chips.
Too slippery. Yeah.
Too slippery when wet, as John would say. And I was so angry. I'm not even kidding. I feel bad even telling this now. I was so angry, I had to walk away from the bag. I had to walk into another room. I was so angry. And I was so angry because I had paid for it, and I was getting fucked. I don't need to pay to get fucked. So we get in there, right, and you've got Lenny and all, and Ollie's going through a bereavement, right, so you have to give him, like, 500 times that you would cuss him out, but you don't, you know? So you go, right, okay. So he's kind of bulletproof now, right? He's essentially...
Right.
He's essentially got that shield in a video game that you just can't kill him, no matter what, right?
He has the invincibility cheat codes on. Yeah.
He has like 100 of them. So him and Lenny are sitting there, and Lenny's going, oh, this fish is tremendous. I'm having such a great time, so I am. I said, Lenny, fuck you, right? Now, I should also mention at this point, it was Lenny's birthday. It's not my fucking problem, do you know what I mean, right? So, I've just bought my special fucking fish, and he's got it in a fucking box, and he's got the audacity to be, oh, that's lovely, that's, oh, that's hitting the spot right there. Listen, my fucking face will hit the spot of your face in a minute. So, I'm sitting there, and I'm fuming, and I'm so angry, and everybody's enjoying their food, and I'm just sitting thinking of that fucking fish. So I go on my laptop, and I think, right, I need to contact Just Eat here, because this is a travesty of justice.
It needs to be corrected.
Now, this was 11 o'clock, but because the delivery time had been set for 11:25, I can't get in touch with them for 25 more minutes. And then in pipes Victoria, right? She's lucky she was a woman, because if she was not, there would have been issues. So she turns around and she says, "I don't see what your problem is, Kenny." I said, "Excuse me?" "Well, you know, I mean, it's a shame to let food go to waste. You're just wasting money." And in my head I'm going, "Who the fuck do you think's wasting money here, bitch?" But I didn't say that, because she is his cousin, and she is also going through bereavement, so I can't even shout at her.
Right?
So you've got bereavement fucks and a birthday fuck, and then the guy who's really getting fucked, who hasn't got the fish that he needs, that's congealed on top of the chips. So I was really angry, as you can imagine, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm sitting here, I had to pour myself a vodka, I had to calm down. So Victoria's egging me on even more, because she's just going, "Will you just go and eat your food, Kenny?" And I said, "No, Victoria, I will not go and eat my food because I'm angry. And I'm not going to eat a chippy is a glorious thing. I'm not going to eat it angry. I'm going to eat it when I'm happy." Yeah. And I thought, right, I'm just going to let myself cool off. And if I just had 20 minutes to cool off, I'd have been fine. Did I get 20 minutes? No. Every single fucking one of them, Ollie's like, "You're not going to get your dinner, Kenny?" "No, I'm not. Thank you very much, Ollie." "Victoria, I think that's just an absolute waste of money, so I do." "Well, if you'd fucking paid a penny towards it, bitch, we could have fucking had a conversation. But you did not." Again, though, she's going through bereavement, so I don't say anything. I'm being the nice guy here.
You got to put it in the pocket, Kenny.
So then Victoria decides. Do you know what Victoria decides, David? "Oh, I've not had enough expressed thoughts about the situation that I'm not involved in it." As she's shoveling chips down like an African child out in rainforest. So she says, "Can I be honest with you, Kenny?" I was like, "Well, I think you're going to fucking be anyway, regardless of what I think, but go ahead." And she says, I understand where you're coming from, but I do think you've blown this a little out of proportion, to be honest."
Oh.
And I just thought, they're going to have two funerals now. Do you know what I mean? And I'm going to be in the papers, "Podcaster kills women over fish." And it's going to be hard for Ollie to stay friends with me when she's dead, but through wrestling connections, I can make it up to him. So there's all these things going through my head. But again, I walk away, because I'm the bigger man, ladies and gentlemen. I'm the bigger man here.
Yeah, oh, clearly, clearly.
So then I've poured my second vodka now, because I fucking tanned the first one like an alcoholic at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'm on the second one now.
She was driving you to drink, though, Kenny. She was driving. That's why.
Thank you. She was driving me to drink. So then I come back into the living room, and Ollie, oh, he was testing my bereavement limitations here. He said, "I don't see what your problem is, Kenny. My fish is lovely." "I'm sure it fucking is, motherfucker. It came in a nice box. It was basically like fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze and Batman. It was being chronologically fucking frozen to be the best possible fish for you, so you could have it. I was fucked, though." So anyway, Ollie, to his credit, Ollie tries to masquerade the shiteness of the fish, right? So he goes away and tries to basically flip the fish over onto a plate. So the side that had been massacred was not visible to me. Right, as this is going on...
The other cheek. Beer goggles, if you will. He thought that you were drunk enough at that point to where he could pass it off as a new one.
Exactly. So I get my laptop, because it's now 11:27 p.m. Do you know what that means, David?
It means that sleepy time's coming up soon, I would imagine.
No, it means that Just Eat are open for complaints. So I get my laptop and I've got my third vodka now, because I'm on a run, and I open up the Just Eat and it goes, I'm like, "Well, how do you complain to Just Eat? How do you, and, I mean, the main thing is you shouldn't be a fucking mentalist who tries to complain to Just Eat, but we'll get to that point." I'm too far in. I'm too in the moment. So, I'm like Cornette with a blind rage. I can't see anything. So then I saw the two words that just were like heaven to me at that point. Live chat.
Oh!
so I open
by
up.
By the way, uh-huh. The people who do those live chat customer service things,
mm-hmm.
they have to have the patience of a saint.
Well, I mean, this woman definitely did. So I get Carrie from customer relations at Just Eat. Fucking hell. And she's like, how can I help you? And I said, hi, Carrie. I've recently ordered 3 fish suppers. And she's probably in fucking, you know, Malawi. Doesn't know what a fish supper is.
Bangladesh. Yeah.
So I said, I've just ordered this food and, you know, it's come in. And I said, 2 of the fish were beautiful. They were delightful. However, the 3rd fish looked like it had been shot with a gun. And all that was left were the remnants spread across some chips.
Not even a gun, Kenny, a cannonball.
A cannonball had gone off in my bag of food. So, and the thing was, I had made peace with this was like my last cheat meal of the week, and it was ruined. So I was even more angry. So
that makes it so much worse.
So I'm sitting there, and I'm typing away, and I was like, Carrie, I'll tell you what it is, Carrie, because I was a condescending fuck, because like, I have to be. Because, you know, some people have real problems, and I'm like, I get to podcast for a living, and I'm angry because my fish wasn't right. What a fucking cretin I am. Anyway, so I'm typing away to Carrie, and I'm like, you know, Carrie, I spent nearly £30 on this order, and then I said, and my friends just went through a bereavement. So I said, I don't think it's a lot to ask that all 3 fish are intact when they get to me.
Kenny, that's a new low, and you're coming from a man who went up to Vader and goes, I know how you feel. I also have a heart condition.
It's a completely different scenario. I refuse to symbolize them. But the thing was, so I'm sitting there, and then Victoria is just staring at me, right? Like she's walked into some sort of weird social experiment. And she's like, and she kept saying to Ollie,
she thinks that you're fucking with her at this point, probably.
Uh-huh. So, and she says to Ollie, is he for real?
Yeah.
And so Victoria says, Kenny, what you doing? I said, nothing. And they can see me feverishly typing, like I'm about to plot some sort of attack with Skynet. and they said, what are you doing? And that what are you doing? That was what I needed, David. Because when she said, what are you doing? I came out of my own body and I thought, you pathetic little fuck. So, as Carrie was trying to resolve this, I type again and I say, Carrie, are you there? And she says, yes, Kenny. I said, I need to be honest with you, Carrie. I think I've overreacted here. I said, so I'm going to retract my complaint and wish you all the best for the rest of your day. And she said, well, that's fine, Kenny, but if you want to call us back at 4 o'clock tomorrow and we can investigate it further. She's fucking Columbo about it. She's great. She's Jessica Fletcher at the end of the episode trying to figure out who fucking used the candlestick. And I'm sitting here and I'm just like, my friend has just lost his mother. And I am on a live web chat complaining about a fish batter peel.
Oh, man.
And then Ollie plates it up for me and puts it in the oven and heats it up for me. And essentially serves me this dinner. And I felt pretty bad about myself at the end of it. And that was Fishgate. And I'd like to apologize to Lenny for numerous times on his birthday after I, you know, put some money towards, well, I mean, I bought it for him, let's not say put money towards, bought him his dinner. I gave him the finger 3 times. I think at one point I threatened to fuck him. I also told him to go fuck himself. I threatened to break his glasses. I'm sure I gave Victoria some looks, so I apologize to her. I apologize to him. I apologize to Ollie for the whole situation. Because
now, see, Kenny, what I'm imagining though is you coming up to this man who it's his birthday and just grabbing his glasses from his face and snapping them in two, and then handing him very, very carefully, handing him the 2 pieces of glasses, and then going, "If you don't cut it out, I'm gonna fuck you." And then just walk.
Well, actually, the thing was, I never realized it was his birthday because we'd only met a couple of times. So then, Ollie put the night before Ollie pulled at midnight.
Hold on, Hold on. I'm imagining him showing up with a birthday hat on, holding balloons that says it's my birthday and you don't get it.
I mean, that's, minus the balloons, is essentially what happened. The thing was, the night before it reached midnight, and I'm in the kitchen doing some dishes, and Ollie starts bringing out birthday presents, and he's got him this Star Trek book, because Lenny loves Star Trek. He got him, like, an ironic chocolate bar of Donald Trump. And I thought, I've not got this guy a present. So I walk into the living room, and I said, Lenny, and I'm really trying to think on my feet here. I said, Lenny, I didn't get you a birthday present. So, for whatever reason, I said, I'll tell you what, though. I'll fuck you if you want, as a birthday present. Because that's the gift that you give someone.
Yeah,
if you don't have
the gift that keeps on giving for at least 3 to 4 minutes.
I mean, Melanie, that'd be probably need to be a triple session to get to that point, but... So, I feel embarrassed, everybody. I feel like I went too far, but I can't lie to you that the rage was real, because fish and chips means a lot to me, and I love fish and chips, and when they are... Somebody puts a grenade in the bag, and when it reaches me, I've got to deal with the fucking albatross of what's happened to it. I find it hard to keep my composure. I'm trying to be there for my friend. I've got a lot going on. I'm trying to run a business. There's a lot of stuff going on, right? So I feel like that should all be taken into account. But David, that's Fishgate. Feel free to tell me your honest response to that.
Kenny, I respect you more as a man now, because you asserted your dominance over that horrible fish, even though at the very end you realized that you had overreacted, which makes me respect you even more, because a real man, or a real woman even, knows whenever they make a mistake and they own up to it. So kudos, Kenny. I respect you as a human being over all this story. I think that it has a wonderful feel-good ending that people can learn from, and we had fun on the way. I am a fan of Fishgate. I think it's one of the better inside-the-ropes banter stories.
And the thing is, like, all joking aside, David, you know me pretty well, right?
I do. I like to think I do.
Do you think I embellished one bit of that story?
No, I absolutely do not. I believe, because you are very much a person, you wear your heart on your sleeve, especially whenever that heart is beating for fish and chips.
Everybody who knows me knows that story was completely genuine. And
yes.
I'm ashamed of myself. So let's just move on, shall we? from that. But you know, do tweet me and David with the hashtag Fishgate and let us know where you stand on fish and chips. Now, to all of our American listeners, we love you dearly, but just Google fish and chips if you have questions. You don't need any messages asking us to give you the full history of fish and chips.
Most people, like whenever I went over to the UK, I was like, oh, I need to get fish and chips because I love French fries. Right?
But did you get it from a proper chip shop though?
I got them from a pub.
Oh, no, David!
And...
That's like getting your burgers from White Castle.
I will gladly get burgers from White Castle.
And that explains your heart problems. Well, then, the next time you're in the UK, I'm going to take you to a chip shop, because once you've had a chip shop fish and chips, it's sensational. But anyway, continue.
We got to do it. But no, that's the thing, though, is whenever people visit the UK, they need to go and get the fish and chips.
So if anybody
most
goes,
people know what fish and chips
if
are.
If you go to get fish and chips in the UK, you need to go to a chip shop. You do not get it in a pub. You get it in a chip shop.
To be fair, I was pretty liquored up at that point. I don't think I would have noticed what the fish and chips taste like. They could have brought me the scrotum of a homeless man, and I'd be like, this is pretty fucking good, though.
I mean, the thing is, I feel really bad because with Court's interview and my fish story... We are now over 1 hour into the podcast, and we have not spoken about Monday Night Raw. So I feel like I'm entering old school Sondra NXT rundown territory. Right, so here's a funny story. So Ollie, who I mentioned, who is listening to this, so we wish you all the best. I say that as I'm going to see him tomorrow, but like, you know. Anyway, so Sondra originally did the NXT rundown with Bob, and we thought that Bob and Sondra would be a great duo to do it because Bob was from New York, and he'd been to Madison Square Garden to see Bruno in the 70s, And then Sondra had started watching in 2010, so their perspectives were completely different. But then Bob died about 9 months into them doing the podcast together, and it was Sondra's first time podcasting. She was quite nervous. So I said to Sondra, I said, you know, whatever you want to do, it's your call. If you want to keep doing it, we'll figure out a way. If you don't want to do it, it's fine. So she wants to keep doing it. And God bless Sondra, but her one weakness is reining it in, time-wise. As David, you can attest to this.
Yes.
So
I mean, you did just go on 30 minutes talking about fish and chips, but yes.
So Ollie and Sondra 1 week recorded an NXT rundown. Now, the rule that I've always kind of had is, well, you know, the review should never really be longer than the show.
Right.
That should kind of be the estimate. So she sends me this 2 hour and 35 minute review episode of NXT. And NXT is 45 minutes. And I said, Sondra, why the fuck is there a 2.5 hour? And she was like, that's the edited down version. I said, how long was the real fucking version? About 5 hours. It was just them day drinking. And
Well, I mean, to be fair, that sounds like a good time, Kenny.
The thing is, though, as much as Sondra loves the nuance of Devon Taylor's clothes, 99% of everybody else does not. So, but Ollie contributed to that problem. Anyway, Yellow Ropes Forever, though, on Patreon, you can listen to that. But what I was thinking we could do is, this was a pretty average episode of Raw, I think we can agree, so I was thinking we could just hit the big points this week rather than go through everything, if that's cool with you.
Sure. No, that is fine. Val was watching the show, and she's been a little bit down in the dumps lately, and it led to some really funny Valisms throughout the show. So
we look forward to hearing them as we go on here.
Yeah, just like the pinnacle of darkness throughout this episode, which she despised.
I found it interesting at the beginning of the show when everyone was standing at the top of the stage to take a moment for Las Vegas that Shane was standing next to Vince on a Raw show. Don't know why that is, but there you go. Tom Phillips is taking over from Michael Cole this week because Michael Cole's son was getting married. Who gets married on a Monday? Anyway. We open up with Braun Strowman against Seth Rollins. The match goes about 10 minutes. You know, Strowman was in offense for most of the time, but Rollins was trying to battle back from underneath. But in the end, Strowman hit his power slam finisher for the win. Afterwards, he tries to keep beating up Rollins, and then Dean Ambrose comes out to try and make the save. Ambrose tries his best to handle Braun, but he gets chokeslammed and power slammed, and basically Strowman leaves them in a heap, and that brings it Sheamus and Cesaro, who walk past him and then beat up Rollins and Ambrose, and that was the end of that. I thought it was a fun opening segment. Big fan of Sheamus and Cesaro getting some more time, but what did you think of this opening shebang?
It started pretty hot, and I thought that they had like a really good contest. Did you?
Yeah, no, I did think it was good. I think it's difficult for me because I quite like to believe that the Shield, all three of them are equal. And Braun Strowman's like the one thing that makes you completely forget that they're equal because,
right.
Roman could handle Braun, but neither of the other two can.
Yeah, Andrea on Twitter remarked about that, and I do completely agree, but just talking in terms of match, I thought that these two worked really well together.
Yeah, no, I really like the story of Seth being the sort of valiant underdog trying to battle back from the monster. I like that dynamic.
Absolutely. No, they did a good job of that. I'm still worried about Cesaro. Like, I know he hasn't had his operation on his teeth yet, and I know that has to be just terrible. So I'm just like, oh man, poor dude. But, you know, he's obviously all right. He's on television and he's competing.
Got a mouth guard. The thing is, if you're getting a main level spot potentially in like a Shield reunion main event, you don't give up that spot, you know?
No, you don't. And he is, we can agree, he's like the toughest motherfucker on the planet, right?
I just love Sheamus and Cesaro as a team. I love them.
I do too.
Like,
I was
tempted to buy the bar t-shirt because I just think it's like, so them. It's so loud and shite, but it's so them, you know? They don't care about fashion. They're just like you can imagine in a meeting that somebody was like, so Sheamus and Cesaro, we want to make a t-shirt for you. What do you want it to be? We're the bar. What do you mean? Just write the bar. Picture of us. But that may look a bit clunky. Doesn't matter. Put it on there. And that's it. I love them.
Just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
We get Mickey James. The kind of thread of the story for Heart of the Night is that she goes to... She's walking past Alicia Fox, and then she ends up going to Alexa Bliss's dressing room. Nia Jax answers the door. Nia Jax is basically saying, you know, do you want something? Nikki James says she wants Alexa Bliss. And basically, all ends with Alexa Bliss offering Mickey a match against Nia Jax, which she accepts. They have a match. I mean, it goes like 10 minutes. It was a little bit long. I think that these kind of matches kind of expose Nia Jax a little bit. Because...
Yeah.
I don't think Mickey's super hot as a character, and I think that's what makes it fall down. I think that Sasha, for whatever reason, is able to do a much better match with Nia. But you know, Mickey and Nia haven't wrestled a lot, but I did really enjoy the finish where Mickey hits the tornado DDT and goes for the cover, and Alexa Bliss runs in and breaks up, because there you're serving the two masters. You can say that Mickey James had Nia Jax beat, but Nia Jax never got beat, so she doesn't lose anything there. It kind of reminded me of the this is one to pop you, David. It reminded me of the Macho Man Randy Savage hitting the elbow on Yokozuna in 1994 and Crush coming in at the last second, you know, like that kind of thing. I love show that, because you can argue with your friends for hours about, like, oh, Mickey would have pinned her. No way would Nia have got pinned by a DDT. And it, you know, those kind of conversations with, like, younger wrestling fans and stuff, like what it's all about. So match, could take it or leave it, but I really enjoyed the finish. What do you think?
No, the match itself, it was okay. They had a few sloppy spots there, but I thought that they did well enough to cover them up. And Mickey is a veteran. She is a pro, so she was able to, you know, switch it around a bit. The reason that Sasha works better, I think that just Sasha is the best all-around female performer on Raw, at least for the next few weeks. yeah. It was interesting, and I liked seeing these first time matches at least. I think that that's good. And the way that Nia is going to learn and get better is by being in the ring with people who are much better than her, and that definitely is Mickey. So it's, you know, it's training on the fly. Sometimes you just got to dive into the water and hope you can swim, you know.
Yeah, 100%. We do then get some more stuff with Mickey James, because she ends up getting speaking to Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle's going to give her a match at TLC. Now, obviously, they're using her age quite a lot in this storyline, as kind of a, you know, she's too old and all that sort of stuff. What do you think about that? Because obviously, I mean, she is 38 years old, but she's not. I mean, she looks great for her age. You know, she looks tremendous.
There's numerous women on the roster who are older than her. She's not the oldest.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, the kind of the you know, the whole thing that she did with Emma, with this, you know, the admirer and all that kind of stuff. What do you think about it? Talk me through your thoughts on the age angle.
Somebody mentioned, I forget who it was. It may have been Karan. I'm not sure, but someone mentioned that it felt kind of Divas angle-y. And that's kind of the vibe that I got. It's catty women being catty women, which is just a huge step back for the women's division. I'm not a fan of that. It's nothing that engages me. You know what I mean? Like, that's fine to do, like, dramatic angles and such, like, or even campy angles. Because, I mean, you look at, like, the Festival of Friendship. The ultimate campy angle, and I ate that up. But I feel like something like this, it's just... I mean, hell, Alicia Fox has got to be just a couple years younger, right?
Yeah, I think Alicia Fox, let me find it for you, what age she is.
I can Google real quick. No,
I'm sorry, I've got it. Alicia Fox is 31 years... Alicia Fox is younger than me, fucking hell. So Alicia Fox is pretty young.
Okay, all right. Well, Alicia Fox, bad example. She's just been around forever. I figured she would be older. But
Tamina, she's 96 years old.
Tamina, Natalia, Stephanie McMahon, these are people who are older than Mickie James, so...
But you know what? Vince has had this for years with men and women. It's not a sexism thing. He's got this thing that when you hit almost 40, that he kind of has this thing. And, you know, the only exception is if you don't look your age, and he buys it, but for whatever, you know, for whatever reason he knows. I think for me, what's the bigger issue, I'm with you, I think it's a bit divas angling, and I'm not too keen on it, but I think part of the problem is I don't really think that Mickie James is that captivating a character. And I think that they're having to use these kind of lazy things because there's not really much else to use with her. And I don't really know what you do about that. Like, I think that Mickie James kind of feels a little bit to me like it's good to see her in matches, but like, what's the story with Mickie James?
Yeah, it's just sort of, it's fallen on deaf ears, I feel, you know?
I would concur. We do see Matt Hardy teaming up with Jason Jordan again against Club. The Club get the win. Where do you think Matt Hardy's going to go? Jeff apparently is going to be out until almost March. What is your... You always like to say that you're right. So take me through what you think Matt Hardy is going to have the next 6 months.
Oh, man. It's not going to be what we want, I don't think. This impromptu tag team that they're doing right now with Jason Jordan, I have a feeling they're going to stick with this for way longer than they should have. It's like, okay, if they were going to stick Jason Jordan in a tag team, you know what tag team would have been really good to put him in? Fucking American Alpha. So I don't know. To me, he was already in a successful tag team that was... that was proven to work in NXT. They could make it work if they actually tried in WWE. So it's very frustrating to me, Kenny. But yeah, this is going to be really tough for Matt Hardy because I don't feel like they see him as a single star or a single success. Jeff, yes, but even then he's starting to creep up there in age a little bit. He doesn't look it whatsoever, which plays to his benefit. Especially given, you know, like AJ Styles and guys who are older who look a little bit younger, who tend to get pushed more in spite of their age. It's going to be rough, though. I see him sort of in makeshift tag teams for a while. Maybe he will get a losing singles run at the mid-card title, whichever one may or may not be on Raw over the next 6 months. I don't see him capturing any gold, though, in that instance. Obviously, the hope would be for the broken persona, but I'm getting near the end of the rope on that, Kenny.
Yeah, I also I think that the thing that's difficult is, you know that Matt Hardy's cut his hair? And, I'd like to think that the haircut is maybe like the beginning of something, but I don't know. Like, yeah, it's one of those. I feel like he either needs to soon fully commit to being woken or whatever it's going to be, or just stop doing it because it's just not the half thing is just not working for me anymore. I either need all of it or none of it.
Yeah, Kevin Nash always says you can't be half pregnant. By the way, Kevin Nash, get your tickets for Kevin Nash inside the ropes.co.uk.
Get your tickets. But I don't think from what I saw, I didn't get the sense that we're getting Jason Jordan and Matt as a long-term tag team. It just, you know, kind of felt like a means to an end, which is fine. You know, it's not a problem. I guess we'll see where it goes. On the show... I'm going to try very hard to succinctly explain to you why I hate this. JoJo introduces Dana Warrior. And she's in the ring, tearing up about her husband, the Ultimate Warrior, who never had fucking cancer! And she is there with three women who have survived a battle with breast cancer. And then behind them are every single woman in the division, babyface and heel, all wearing Ultimate Warrior t-shirts. So, like, I liked the Warrior character, but he was a fucking awful human being. And, like, not like, you know, oh, he said some bad stuff. He wished death on people. He said that queering doesn't make the world go round. He said so much bad stuff that he makes Hulk Hogan look like a fucking ambassador. Like,
yeah,
he said bad stuff. And then we've got Dana Warrior out here who, like, she's shaking the ropes. Love, you're not the fucking Ultimate Warrior. Fuck off. And then, you know, they've all got these... The thing that's so harsh about it is part of it is really lovely. You know, you've got these breast cancer survivors and they're getting a title belt and all that sort of stuff, and that's great. And then you've got this fucking guy's music playing and we're supposed to act like he was the second coming of God. And he wasn't.
There are videos that you can find of him wishing death on gay people on YouTube.
Yeah, that stuff doesn't go away. And, you know...
No, it doesn't.
And then, you know, I mean, Robert and I have talked before about the whole Susan G. Coleman thing.
Yeah.
Read up on that. Yeah. It's an issue. But
yeah. With the Coleman thing, give to different...
Give to charities that give to cancer research, not ones that pay
their
CEOs.
Don't line the pockets of CEOs of non-profits that are actually for-profit.
But yeah, this segment just kind of felt... Like, I get it. Like, I get they want, you know, like... The idea that, you know, Dana Warrior is there and she's an ambassador. But I tell you this, do you know, see when she was shaking those ropes, I was like, can you imagine when Hogan's dead? Do we have to fucking watch Linda McMahon do the Hogan poses? Is that going to be what we have to do? No. And I'm sure...
I will say this, though. I will say this. We are awfully negative on this segment. These women, though, great on them for surviving breast cancer. And also, they deserve to be in that ring. And they deserve to have the spotlight. But I think we can agree, and I think that this is the focal point of our negativity towards this segment. These women deserve better than the Ultimate Warrior.
Do you know what this is like, right? This, I'm trying to give an example, because I don't want to do like a really, really awful one. Okay, this would be like...
If I had to play good boy this week, Kenny, you have to play good boy too, damn.
This would be like... I'm escalating it here just for the purpose of the story. This would be like a young African-American guy doing a talk to schools about how he got over drugs as he wears a Bill Cosby t-shirt the Cosby Show theme plays. Doesn't work. Doesn't work.
Yeah, not with what we know now. Doesn't really play that well.
And the thing, I don't care if this makes me a bad guy. Like, there's two things. Number one, it's great that they want to raise awareness for cancer research and stuff. That is great. It is great that the women were in there. I like that every year some breast cancer survivors get to come in an arena and the fans respect them and give them an ovation. I like that. Now, some people will say, well, Kenny, you need to just accept that this is bigger than wrestling. I go, no, I don't. Because I think you can do the whole thing and you don't have to have your heels and baby faces all out there hugging people together. I don't think you need to do that. I don't think that it adds anything to it. I don't think that it... I think you could have very easily just had, like, the baby faces there. Like, I just think when you have the heels there doing that, it completely takes you out of the moment of what you're trying to watch. It's like, imagine if you're watching... I need to get a new reference because Breaking Bad's pretty old now.
That's always my go-to as well. That shit's been off the air for several years now.
Say you're watching Dexter, right? And you're watching Dexter, and then you see Dexter killing somebody and carving up his body. Then it goes to the break, and it's the actor who plays Dexter going, "Ladies and gentlemen, I know someone who had cancer. I'd really like you to donate some money." When it comes back from the break, do you really think he's Dexter? No! So instead, what you do is you have the sister who is the good cop. She can do the cancer ad, and then all the lines are fine, and every master served.
You know what I do love though is that you busted out a Dexter reference after you said Breaking Bad was too old. you fucking cunt.
I was going to do Game of Thrones, but I don't watch this. I don't know any of the characters, so
it'd
mean nothing to me. Ah, the guy with the big thing on the wheel is on the horse and goes in the woods. Him.
Ah, yeah. They got the snow zombies. That's what I know about that.
My favorite part of the show was when the Miztourage came out as the Shield through the crowd, They come out, and then Roman Reigns beats the shit out of Dax, Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel.
You almost called him Dexter.
I did.
You combined Dallas and Axel.
And you should not have pointed that out, motherfucker. You should let me get away with that. I gotta
keep you a check. Checks and balances, dude.
I thought this segment was great. Roman beating up the Miz Taraj was really hot. The crowd were really into it. I thought the match with the Miz and Roman Reigns was really good. I thought the Miz was made to look his equal, which I appreciated. There was a couple of falls where I actually almost bought that Miz might beat him, and for it to even get to almost is a big thing for me, because I would not have said that last week. You know, he's hitting skull crushing finales. Miz is ducking Superman punches. You know, Reigns has Superman punch and Miz kicks out of it, which I think is really important for him as a performer to be able to hang. And then Sheamus and Cesaro get involved, cause the DQ, and then the Miz, Sheamus, and Cesaro all beat up Reigns, and then they do the triple powerbomb with the Shield. I thought that the Miz, again, GOAT, and yeah, I really enjoyed the segment, but what did you think of this?
No, this was very interesting. I dug the dynamic that they had here. This was like sports entertainment to its fullest, but it was good. I also bid on a few of the finishes. I really bid on the Superman punch. I thought that was going to be the finish, and then whenever Miz kicked out, I was like, "Oh, damn!" So yeah, it was entertaining. That's the best way to put it, because it was in fact sports entertainment.
And I think that I actually hope that they do Miz, Sheamus, and Cesaro against the Shield rather than putting Braun in there, because I actually think Miz deserves the spot more. Because he's worked really hard. And, you know, The Miz is the guy that gets Roman Reigns cheered. You know, because he's just that good that he can, you know, get you into an angle. So, again, he proves that he is one of the best on the roster right now in terms of character. Finn Balor comes out, cuts a terrible promo, where he's just babbling on. And then Bray Wyatt earlier on in the show had done a promo where he had talked about, it's hard for me because I tend to zone out. But he was in a rocking chair. He talked about, you know, she never lied to me. She never lied to you. She never lied to me. So he's talking about a she. Then he interrupts Balor on the big screen. And Balor had said, you know, the demon beat you at SummerSlam. The man beat you at No Mercy. And Wyatt says, you know, Abigail's alive and she's dying to meet you. And then they have some special effects to make him look like a zombie, and he laughed maniacally, and I'm like, what this is like, see when you go out with the, so David, let's sure. Imagine back in your younger days, right?
Of course.
And you go out with this crazy, crazy girl, right? But she's
sure.
Dynamite in bed, you get on well enough, and then one day, she's just too crazy and you split up, right? You go, no, that's it, it's done.
Right. So it's over at that point. There's nothing more that you can do.
Yeah, it's done, right? Bray Wyatt.
That well is dry.
Bray Wyatt is my crazy girl. Because then what happens is about 6 months later, you see the crazy girl looking at her best. You've not had any of the cray-cray for 6 months, so you've forgotten about it, and you're like, ooh, I mean, you know, maybe, you know, maybe I should just go over and say hi, and... And now Bray Wyatt's, you know, Little Sister Abigail reference, wee zombie effect. I'm like, oh, all right, Bray, how's it going? You know, I'm almost, you know, taking my t-shirt down, doing a bit of Sigourney Weaver from Ghostbusters up the top of the thing. But then I have to bring myself back and go, no, I have to quit him because it will not go anywhere. But I thought
it's not going to end the way that you want it to.
But I thought the segment was fun. I will give it that. What did you think of Bray Wyatt and the apparent emergence of Sister Abigail? It seems to be imminent.
I dug this. I thought that it was pretty good. Val made an excellent fan theory, though, on this. She was watching this, and up to this point, by the way, she's just all like, when's this fucking show going to end? She was just like completely, like the entire time, just screaming to no one in particular, this week is a 1 out of 10. If anybody wants my opinion on Inside the Ropes, it's fucking shit. You're going to remember all of this. in your dying days, you're going to go, well, I wasted 3 hours on that fucking shit. And I'm just sitting there like, Jesus Christ, it's bad. It's not that bad, though.
Say how you really feel, though.
And then out of nowhere, like up to this point, she's just screaming bloody murder over everything. And then she just leans in and she goes, you know what would be great, actually, is if Bray Wyatt's actually Sister Abigail, like Norman Bates.
Oh, that would be great.
Like seriously, how great would that be? I'm just all like, so you just spent like 2 hours screaming how much you hate everything at the television, and then you just come up with that bit of genius out of nowhere. I'm like, huh?
That's why you're mad at her.
That is her genius process, I guess. She gets angry and screams at everything, and then she shits out a nugget of gold.
We got a tag match where Sasha and Bayley beat Emma and Alicia Fox when Emma walked out on Alicia, kind of similar to when Nia was angry at Emma post-match last week. So I guess we'll see where that goes. I don't really have anything to say on it.
Val was screaming because she enjoyed the Bray thing, and then she was like, yeah, maybe this moved up to a 2. And after this, she screamed, never mind, it's back down to a fucking 0.
So that takes us to the main event segment.
Though, there was a point when, Corey Graves, leaned into Booker and goes, so does that mean that she snatched her bald? And then Booker goes, ah, in the hood, dog. And then at that point, Val leaned in and very, wistfully goes, I think that made it a 3, actually.
That woman. It's main event time. We get Enzo Amore. He's going to address the cruiserweight division again. He cuts a promo, talks about, you know, how, you know, what he did last week, and people are jealous of him, and, you know, he's not cheap. He puts over how much money he's got. He puts butts in seats. Neville's music hits. He comes out with all the other cruiserweights. They're all surrounding the ring. He makes fun of them all. Then Kurt Angle's music plays, and Kurt Angle says, you know, yeah, you're right, like, none of the guys at ringside can touch you or get a title shot, but that doesn't apply to the newest cruiserweight that I've signed. So I want you to imagine, take you through my thought process here.
Sure.
We'll call this Kalisto Gate. So Enzo comes out and he cuts this great promo. Very, very fun heel promo. And I'm digging it and I'm into it. And then the cruiserweights come out and they no-sell Enzo's insults, and his insults were quite good, and they're them sort of no selling was quite good. So I was enjoying the segment. I was kind of like, I like this is good. And then Kurt Angle comes out and he's like, I've got a new cruiserweight, and we're all hoping it's Rey Mysterio. That's who we all want.
We're all
in our heads.
Can I name off like a few people that I thought that it might be?
Sure.
I was sitting there and I'm like, oh man, wouldn't it be great if it were like Johnny Gargano? Or let's say out of nowhere, Zack Sabre Jr. shows up, you know, somebody like that. We knew it wouldn't be Kota Ibushi because he loves fireworks too much. but you know, I'm sitting there and I'm going through all these great names. ACH, wouldn't that be great if it was ACH? He just showed up out of nowhere.
Lovely.
And you know, even just like I'm digging around in like the deepest, darkest pit of my mind. And I'm like, oh man, what if it's like a, what if it ends up being like a, New Japan takeover with Kushida or something, you know, just the craziest crevices of my mind being explored, Kenny. And then,
and out walks the shite on a stick that is Kalisto.
Kalisto's music hit, and I was all like, oh, wait a minute, isn't TJ Perkins already out there? And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. Both their music starts exactly the same.
Let me give you an example of what it's like with Kalisto coming out. Kurt Angle coming out and saying, I've signed somebody new, is essentially like your parents coming up to you and going, have you seen there's a new PlayStation? Here's a box that I got for you. And then you open it up. And you're very puzzled. Do you know why people are puzzled, David?
Because it's the PlayStation box, but it's empty?
It is the PlayStation Box. You're excited. You're even more excited. Oh, it's the PlayStation Box. They've got me a PlayStation. You're like, this feels quite light to be a PlayStation. And then one of your senses starts to become very astute. And you open the PlayStation Box. And not just one parent. Not just your mum. But your dad. Both of them. They've went out and got you a PlayStation Box. And they've shat in it.
Oh, I knew that smell was weird. I knew there was something wrong with that.
That is Callisto. Two parent shites in an empty PlayStation Box. And the thing is, his new music is so bad that it makes me long for Lucha Lucha Lucha. That's how bad it is.
Oh no.
And the thing is, you know, Kalisto being in the Cruiserweight division makes sense. Made sense fucking year ago.
Yeah, back whenever he was relevant in the slightest.
So, but, I think Martin McKee summed it up perfectly, where it was like, great segment, yeah. Enzo was really good, deflated as fuck about who came out, and I'm like, yep, I'm with you. I'm 100%.
What really bothered me about this was, They had the crowd, I feel. Like, the crowd was kind of digging this by the end of it. And then they brought out Kalisto, and they lost the crowd. And if it takes a lot to re-engage a crowd, but then whenever you just snap your finger, you can just end it immediately. And after that crowd's been betrayed once, after they were already disinterested, it's so difficult to drive them back to the product, Kenny. It's so difficult.
It is tough. It is tough. I thought the segment was good. It's just the Kalisto thing kind of brought it down for me.
It killed it. I thought that the segment itself, though, was excellent. I thought that they... I'm going to have to eat some crow on this, I think, Kenny, because...
What do you mean?
Enzo's looking like he might be the right champion for the division.
Oh, no, he absolutely is. We were wrong.
Yeah.
And the worst thing was, we were so sure of ourselves. We were on that podcast on Patreon, patreon.com/insideropes, and we were so sure about, oh, let's open the show with us criticizing Enzo.
Yeah.
You know what? There's nothing I like more in wrestling than when someone proves me wrong. I do love it, because just when you think you know everything about something and somebody comes in and kind of, you know, shakes it up, I like it.
Absolutely.
My score for this show was going to be quite low, not because it wasn't a bad show. It was just very, very average. So in my head, as we're getting into the main event, I was kind of like, this is going to be a 6, because... it would have been average, but I really loved the Miz and Roman Reigns thing. I thought that was great. Highlight of the show. And then the Enzo thing was going quite well. But the reveal is actually taking it down to a 4 for me. Because, and it's not because of Kalisto, it's not my sort of bias towards Kalisto, but I think that putting the Cruiserweights in the main event spot was the wrong choice. Especially with what you had as a reveal. I think there's a lot of fluff on the show that didn't really excite. Like, usually I always watch it on a Tuesday, and it tends to go quite fast. But I did find myself kind of looking at my watch a couple of times. So,
yeah.
But I think that's kind of the problem when you're in this kind of like, we're like directly in this weird pay-per-view cycle where like, Hell in a Cell's on Sunday. So everything's kind of gearing towards that on SmackDown, but then there's still a couple of weeks till TLC, but then everyone goes to Survivor Series. There's a lot going on. So sometimes... So for me, it's a 4 out of 10. That's my final score for this week.
That is one higher than what Val would have given it, and it was going to be a 0.5 out of 10, but then Booker T said, ha ha ha, dog. And then that was the difference maker, I guess, for her. I think maybe for the first time ever, I'm going to go with a higher score than you on a Raw.
This has happened a couple of times, but it is rare.
It is very rare. I am more of the pessimist compared to you. I'm going to go with an even keel 5 out of 10. This show didn't do much for me one way or the other. I think closing the show with a tease of the S.H.I.E.L.D. reunion and not giving the fans the fist bump kind of hurt it, because they essentially did the fist bump without doing the fist bump, which is essentially like having sex without ejaculating. So
I totally forgot to bring up that. Yeah, right at the end we have Roman Reigns selling his injuries, and then Seth and Dean show up. Not Death and Scene, but Seth and Dean show up, and they all kind of stare at each other. The problem was, I think a lot of people tuned out by the time that happened. So I think you kind of lost people.
But I mean, the people there, they were pretty hot for it. But then whenever they just disassembled without doing the fist bump, it really...
I do think you leave the fist bump for in the ring. But then if you're going to do that, maybe you don't do the segment.
Yes, exactly. It's better to not do that at all than to do what they did, I think. So.
But I think that the way that people reacted to Roman tonight, I think he will experience a little bit of positive reaction now with the Shield. Because people just want to see the Shield, you know, they do. And,
the Shield were a great act.
And it'll be fun to have them around for a couple of months. You know, that would be fun, especially like Survivor Series. The Shield as part of Team Raw would be really fun. You know,
sure.
I'd love to see the Shield circling Nakamura. You know, stuff like that. That'd be really cool. So, fine by me.
Absolutely.
So there you go.
Other things that I liked on the show, I thought that the Cruiserweight segment in the main event was actually really good. I thought it was a highlight of the show in general. It was a weak Raw, though. That would be why. And I also really enjoyed The Drifter, his cover version of Nutshell by Alice in Chains. So, there.
There you go. Thank you everyone for listening. I apologize again for Fishgate. please do head over to Twitter and get Court Bauer at Court Bauer or at MLW if you want to follow along with One Shot, the event coming up this week. You can get David at Zoopsoul, that's ZOOPSOUL. Yes, he does have a heart condition. And you can get me at KennyMC1985. Actually, 1985 is not the year of my birth. My year of birth was 1995, but it wasn't available. Had to get 1985.
It's I see. You haven't been watching wrestling as long as I have then.
No, I started watching when I was 2, 20 years ago. I would have been 1.5 because I started watching around September 96, just in time for Retro Raw. So, I'm really looking forward to turning 23 next year. And
That would explain your sexual inexperience as well.
Not calling the kettle black there, love. Anyway, patreon.com/insidetheropes for the Bad Blood review this week, the Court Bauer chat that should be up there now, and Sandra and I will be back tomorrow with the SmackDown summary. Tons of stuff coming up. Thank you as always, and also I will leave you with this. We have had a one night only show in Manchester, we've had a one night only show in Cork, we've had a one night only show in London, or we will have one. No, we had a Jim Cornette one night show. We've not had a one night only show in Glasgow, but I am working on making sure we have one before the end of the year. So,
I can't wait to talk to Kenny once we get done with this. That way he can tell me the names.
let's just say maybe a WWE Hall of Famer is coming to Glasgow with us before the end of the year. You never know. Anyway, I'm going to get off this line and go tell David who it is, because it only happened today. And
I cannot wait for that Coco Beware one night only. It's going to be great, you guys.
Coco, I want to ask you the really hard questions. Why are you in the Hall of Fame?
I thought you were going to say, did you have sexual relations with Frankie?
Coco, how do you feel about the real speculation, the real criticisms and the real rumours out there that people feel that Donald Trump is a more worthy Hall of Fame performer than you?
Now, he was in high voltage. You leave him alone. Or whatever.
High energy, for fuck's sake. Don't you old school me and then get it wrong, motherfucker. High Voltage for a WCW jobber tag team. Jesus
Christ. Yes, they were. Who was in High Voltage? Now I'm trying to remember.
Oh, God. It was bad. I remember they looked really bad. I can't remember who though. WCW is your forte.
Yeah. Big, tall, stupid motherfuckers, right?
High energy. Jesus Christ. Coco beware, no one heart. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for all your support. Tweet us. Let us know what you thought of the show. And, that's it. David, it's been a pleasure as always.
There is a lot of really terrible stuff in the world, but we can make a difference on those around us. We feel lost and hopeless and powerless in the times that we live in. But the good news is, whenever you go out today, be kind to people, like Kenny was with the customer service rep, by admitting that he overreacted and making her day a little bit easier by not putting up with him. So go out there and be kind and nice and generous. Spread happiness to people who would not otherwise have happiness in their lives that day. That's all we can do. And together, if we all do that, we can make the world a better place.
I mean, there's only one song I can play that with now. Better.